Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10 and Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Tevas, Pialafon Wendy Foster, offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust, proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity, building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're lucky today to have Roxy Lori, a high school values educator. And first of all, we're going to have a very interesting conversation. But second of all, we're going to learn what a values educator is. So thank you for being here, Roxy.
You're welcome.
So what is a values educator?
A values educator goes into a school and teaches a special class, hopefully to children that want to be in that class. I'm working with a social worker. We go in together. And right now we're in a high school that has a special organization within the high school called SWS, Students Within a School. And so the children that we're working with now get to choose to come to our class to learn this. And we take apart values by each week teaching a specific value, such as empathy, compassion, responsibility. And the syllabus is made from taking each one of those values and talking to the kids, discussion, using role play and activities that we've made up, and then it was my idea to use music with these children, and each week we take a song, analyze a song, take it apart, and use that sort of as a springboard for the rest of the class.
Well, you know, we're in the People's Republic of Santa Barbara, and you're from New York, and so values are pretty homogeneous and agreeable to most people. What do parents think when you talk about values? Do they get concerned sometimes that it may not be their values?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been doing this for a really long time, and I started out as an elementary school teacher, and in that case, the kids didn't have a choice because they were in my classroom, and I basically felt that if children were not taught values, that the rest of the curriculum was not going to be important in their, you know, in their teaching. They weren't able to. Kids don't come in to school anymore with listening skills. Kids don't come in to school anymore with community skills. I think, like you're asking me, do people have different values? Yes, but I think certain values are needed, and if you teach the parents as well as the kids that this is what's needed in order to make your child listen so that they can learn math, so they can learn English, so they can utilize this in their writing skills, that they'll be happy about it. And for the most part they were. I never had a problem being able to integrate the parents into what I was doing, and I felt that everyone was happy about it.
You mentioned community skills. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to go past that. What is communities? I can understand not having listening skills, mm-hmm. but what does it mean by not having community skills?
Mm-hmm. A classroom has to be a community. And I think a long time ago, when I was growing up, the community took care of the kids. You had, first of all, people, I think, for a lot of reasons, people had more religious community, so maybe perhaps that was where their kids learned their values. Or children would go to an after-school program, or even in neighborhoods took care of kids more so than they do today. The neighborhood kids would be out playing, and all of the parents, basically, it was sort of a known fact that that children were supposed to act a certain way and have specific values. That if one child was, being mean to another child, that any parent could step in and help. So now kids come into school without having, without caring about the community. They come to school much more self-centered. It's a much more me, they feel they are the center of the universe, and they've been taught they're the center of the universe, and it's just something that happened culturally. I don't really know why this happened. I've actually been trying to do some reading to find out why this happened. That's a whole, that's a whole other session. But the fact is, it is the way it is. And if you talk to most elementary school teachers, especially, kids do not come in with the skills that I am one in a part of community. We are going to take care of each other. We're going to care about each other. We're going to share with each other. And that makes for a much better educational environment for the kids, plus, obviously the teacher.
It makes for a better society. There's a term now in sociology called the atomization of society, which is a term that speaks to the fact that the unity between peoples have been basically reduced to almost like a tribal relationship. Your alliances go to your tribe, and that's why I think we have this tremendous differences of views in our political system today. And one of the things that I think that's important about what you do is not only helps kids learn, but it helps them become better citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Because there has to be a sense of the importance of your society in order to not only benefit everyone else, but it really benefits you to have a society that cares about people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, unfortunately, today we see this me view manifesting itself in pockets of people, and it's really, in a sense, very disturbing. Mm-hmm. Not just from an educational standpoint. You now teach in high school,
mm-hmm.
and when the high school kids come into class, they used to be elementary school students. Is there anything they learn before they get to you between elementary school and high school that gives them a better sense of community? Or do they come in just as selfish, if I use the word, as the kids that you get fresh in elementary school?
I actually, this is the first semester I'm doing this, so I'm very fresh in my thinking in terms of the differentiation. But I do think it appears that the high school kids are more willing to listen, whether they go out and carry through, in their day-to-day life. I'll have to come back in a year or two and talk to them again. But they do appear to be, more able to listen to you, and they seem more excited about learning these skills and. Especially the way we're doing it. They seem to be, they're very invested. Obviously, as you know, we were all very invested in music when we were 14, 15, 16, 17 was the center of our universe. I mean, for me and most of the friends that I know, that was the case. I mean, so kids love being able to dissect a musical piece and there's a wow factor. There's definitely a wow factor. Wow, this is about that. I never really listened to that lyric.
So you're not talking about playing the record backwards, are you? You're talking about the sense of music that Which is, there's a lot of studies of how music is such an important part of all your senses, and how, you know, well, one of the most obvious is that it brings back memories. Mm-hmm. It's like smell, it really does touch something inside of you that brings back feelings. And I remember when I moved here, I had been for my entire life a New Yorker, and the first couple of weeks I was running on the beach and I was listening to the Beach Boys, I said, boy, this reminds me of my youth running on the beach listening to the Beach Boys. Unfortunately, that wasn't true. I was from New York. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. We're here with Roxy Laurie, a high school values educator. And the important thing about this show today, we're all going to learn about values. So the word values, you used as examples things that I wouldn't necessarily think of as values, like empathy. Empathy, to me, is a characteristic. And is it true that some people either don't or do have empathy, or some people value empathy? Is there a difference? Mm-hmm. Not to parse words.
Yeah, I know. We had difficulty with this also when we were planning the course, because if you go on, if you start Googling values education, character education, it all sort of winds up being a combination thereof. You know, it molds into a lot of this, you know, like said, anti-bullying, conflict resolution. What we felt was you need the values. We're trying to build character, and you need the values to build character. So if you teach each individual concept as a value, to be compassionate to me is a value. If you adopt it as a value, I believe in, you know, empathy, and I'm going to try to be an empathic person, and I'm going to be mindful of this in my life. That's going to help build your character, and that's the way we discussed it with the kids.
What one of the most interesting comments I ever heard from a AHA participant was the girl going to one of the facilitators and saying, "I wish my mom could take this course," because I guess sometimes there's a disconnect between what the kids are learning and beginning to absorb and what they hear at home.
Yeah. You know, when I was teaching little kids, we used to always start. We had something called a morning meeting, and each day we would meet and do something. And at the very beginning of the year, one of the first things we taught the kids was an I message. You know, like how in you have a conflict with someone, and you sit down and you say, instead of saying "you did this, you did that," you'd say "I feel," and you tell them the way you feel. And you know, we tried to teach them how to be honest about it. You know, we taught them in little kid words what vulnerability was. And in the end, if you allow yourself to be vulnerable and if you're honest about your feelings, you can resolve the conflicts. And I had one parent that came in for their conference about their kids. And at this particular year, they were second graders. These were little second graders. And the mom told me, "I have to tell you this, Mrs. Laurie, you know, that my daughter comes home and she makes us all sit in a circle and we have to do our I messages to each other when she hears us fighting." So it is absolutely true. And an addendum to that is that while we were doing this conflict resolution program in the school, which sort of evolved into what I'm doing now, but at that point, we did get the principal to allow us to volunteer. Parents had to volunteer. They weren't forced to do this. But any parent who was interested in what we were doing and wanted to learn some of the, wanted to be explained what exactly we were doing, and also to sit come to a circle once a week and be part of it and learn how to learn what we were teaching the kids. They were able to do that. So we did have parents that volunteered as well to do that. I used to wish that the entire, you know, you would have a school where everyone was participant, you know, the kids as well as the parents, as well as the, you know, from the teachers to the custodians. I think that that would be, you know, a wonderful environment.
One of the things that we're experiencing here, and partly because of AHA in the schools in Santa Barbara, is the emergence of restorative justice in the school, to resolve particularly bullying, where mm-hmm. instead of just punishment, you bring the perpetrator and the victim in, and you let the bully understand the damage they've done to the kid, and through that there's a buildup of empathy and understanding. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you work on?
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with restorative justice, and I agree with it in terms of a society. I think it would be it's a wonderful thing for, you know, would be a great thing if we utilized it more in real criminal justice programs. But I do believe in it. Right now I'm not using that because it's not that's not part of what we're doing. But when I had a classroom, and I will tell you that some people were a little shocked that I did do exactly what you're saying, because I am really a believer of kids being able to be open to talk about with each other what happened and confront the person that is hurting them, whether it's physically or emotionally. And what I would do, there were many times where after recess, somebody would come in and tell me that there had been a problem on the playground, and I would stop the class and have kids go up to the classroom where the other child was and have them come into our classroom, and I'd stick them right smack in the middle of the circle, and we would discuss it. And they weren't always very happy, especially, you know, the child that had done the damage was not especially happy. But for the most part, it worked. And I can't say that it, you know, that that child went out and didn't act out that same behavior again, but they didn't act it out with my kid, so right. So I was happy about that.
Can kids, and actually not just kids, but can anyone at any age learn empathy? Is it learnable, or is it something that just is part of you?
I think, you know, I really do believe that it is learnable, and I almost believe that it has to be learned today, because I think we've lost a lot of that. I remember a time in my life where I thought, well, that, you know, it's just an innate thing that we have, and you have to, you have to bring it out. But I really do believe that you have to learn it. I truly believe that little kids have to learn it, because I don't think they're, anybody is, it's not happening at home anymore, and that's an issue.
Yeah, I mean, and empathy has a very big umbrella. Mm-hmm. One of the other extremes of empathy is that we have a country today that, you know, very few people have all the wealth, mm-hmm. and there doesn't seem, and I hate to get on my political bandwagon, particularly since I'm not running for office, mm-hmm. but with such a disparity in income levels, and such a lack of concern among the very, very rich. That's, there are exceptions, but the idea that it's okay to have most of the wealth and so few is, to me, a manifestation of less than an empathetic population. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think to have a better society, there needs to be a sense of caring for your neighbor, because it just is, to me, very mean. Using a big word, it's mean.
It is mean, and that is something I always use, and I always just say to kids is, isn't it just as easy to be kind as it is to be mean? Like, why would you choose mean if you had a choice? And you made me think of, I just finished reading a book by David Brooks on character building. Mm. And I think it's called The Road to Character. And he talks about in your life that you have there's two parts to you. There's Adam 1 and Adam 2. And Adam 1 is the competitive person. Adam 1, the way he described it was Adam 1 was somebody is your resume, and Adam 2 is your eulogy. And so we used to strive more towards Adam 2. He believes that. Mm-hmm. And today, kids growing up some of them don't even have the Adam 2. Mm-hmm. They just have the Adam 1. And Adam 2 is the person that cares, that does things because they feel it's that, what am I here for? I want to be worthy. I'm here to do something for someone else, not just for me.
You're listening to AHA Presents on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Kids. We're here with Roxy Laurie, High School Values Educator. You mentioned before that you're working with, or you work with a social worker. I work with a social worker also because my wife is a social worker. And I think that's part of the reason we've been married 48 years. Actually, no, that's not the reason. The reason is I listen. I do as I'm told. But how did the social worker help prepare for this work?
Mm-hmm. Actually, this particular course, the social worker, her name is Lori Ballon, and she came to me. As a young woman, she had four children, and I had three out of the four children in my class. And when she went back to school to become a social worker, she came into my classroom and worked on a production I would do each year. She absolutely loved what I did. And basically, to digress, I would take a theme each year and I would use that theme with the kids to teach the things that we're talking about. And for little kids, I would, through songs and through stories that they would write, they would eventually write their own production. And then we would use it as a teaching play to teach other kids. So she always remembered that and came back to me about a year ago and said, now that she's a social worker and she's working with teenagers, and she would like to take some of the things concepts that I utilized and some of the things I did with my classes and come up with a curriculum for high school kids. So she does she does a therapeutic piece. She has a lot of strategies that she uses to talk to kids, to get them to open up and become vulnerable. And so that's her side of it. I always tell her this, that's your piece. Matter of fact, I'm not there this week because I'm here. And, this week is self-worth. And I said, you know, I'm not so big on self-worth because I think kids have a lot of teenagers today, especially in the district that we're teaching, have a little bit too much self-worth. So this is your thing. You do that. You do the therapeutic end to, having them talk to them about feeling good about themselves. And it works. It really works well to have the both of us there. And
but what if this were given in a different state than New York or California, where there's a different view of how you bring up children? And the child comes home and said, I had a really, really good day today. I learned how to be vulnerable. Wouldn't some parents, particularly those, in football country, say, what? you're learning how to be vulnerable. That's not good. I want you to toughen up. Isn't there, maybe we don't see, you don't see it, I don't see it, because mm-hmm. we're in places that are more likely to accept this type of growing as a true human being. But is it for everybody?
I think you're absolutely right. And sadly, I will agree with you that I'm happy that I don't have to go into those places. I do think that there probably, I'd like to hope that there are people out there that are doing this kind of work with that population, that aren't afraid to do it. I'm hoping that there are younger people out there that that would be willing to, you know, to go into districts like that and do this kind of work. But I'll tell you, I'll tell you another interesting story that, yes, certainly we had a lot more cooperation working with this population. Also, I think that the parents that weren't like true believers in what I did all those years with the little kids, that even if they weren't true believers, it would have been kind of too embarrassing to come to me and say, you know, I really don't want my kid learning values, you know. That being said, I had a father who came in to my principal one year and, you know, very irate, very upset. And principal called me in and said, you know, Roxy, you know, this father needs to talk to you. And at that point, I was teaching, I think it was fourth grade. And he's pointing to a vocabulary word that I had given the children. And he said, what kind of word is this to teach my 9-year-old passionate? Why do I care about, actually it was compassion. Why would my 9-year-old have to learn the word compassion? What's she gonna do with that? And so it's not just in those districts that you're talking about. You find those people everywhere.
So going back to when you were growing up, did you get this sense of community, sense of empathy from your parents, from your school? What was your growing up experience?
No. I did not. I think that because I did not have that, that perhaps that was the impetus for me to care so much about this. Because from the very beginning, from the first, I went into teaching late. You know, I wanted to do some other things before I became a teacher, and by the time I went into teaching, I was reading books about, you know, children learning to care for each other. The first step into this was when, years ago, they used to call it peace education. And it sort of had like a hippy-dippy, you know, quality to it. So I took away that name, but that's really what it is. It's, I mean, in bottom line, it's really, in the end, it's all about, you know, when you talk about people caring about each other and people not fighting with each other, when you talk one human being to another, it really is peace education, you know. And I always believed in that. And I think maybe, I don't know, I think maybe I believed in it because I didn't have that as a kid.
So not to be difficult, but playing devil's advocate, why do you need to teach it then? You got it. Maybe, as you said, from not having it, will these kids, I mean, I'm being obviously a little bit facetious here, will these kids, because they've been taught all this, want to go the other way?
I'm a very special person. So I think I was somehow able to, you know, rise as the phoenix out of the ashes, even though.
Well, but this goes back to the question I asked before about whether you can learn empathy. There are people mm-hmm. that are nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the question is, how much is nurture? How much is genetics?
Right.
And how much is, you know, your experiences? And, you know, the question is will you develop these good characteristics only because it's in you, or can you actually learn them? That's sort of
right. You know, I realize that, you know, that it, you know, that is a conundrum, and people do, you know, there are people that would say, I'm absolutely wrong. You can't teach compassion, empathy, you know, respect, honor, all of the things that we would like people to have. But I have to say that I can't say that, no, I have followed all of the children that I had in my classroom and watched them grow and say, oh my gosh, yes, I have statistics for you. I don't. I have no statistics. I do know that it worked in my classroom, and I will tell you that I guess the final thing is that if nothing else, the impetus is that then it allows you to teach your subject matter. And in my classroom, it worked. It worked. It didn't always work when they left. It didn't always work on the playground. It did. And so you're right. Can you really, really teach it? But I like to believe that they own it while they're there, and some of them take it with them. Mm. And hopefully that's the case, you know. And seriously, I never actually thought about this before, but if they can own it for the 9 months that they're there, I don't think they're little kids. They weren't pretending. They weren't acting. And they all looked like they felt really good about it. Yeah. So I got to hope that if everyone was there, as I said, I think I once went to visit a school which for the most part had adopted a program like this school-wide, and you did see a difference in the children. I spent a couple days there and spent it in different grade levels, and you did see a difference in those teenagers in that school. You did see that the teenagers, there definitely was more community. They definitely were taking care of each other. They definitely had ownership of this program, each child, and they looked like it looked honest to me. It looked really honest.
Yeah, I've had this experience with my older son who went to Friends Seminary as a high school, and they were taught values. And I remember one day he told me that there were like eight guys, and one of them didn't have any money to go to the movie, so they didn't go. The other seven didn't go. There was a true sense of caring, and these were high school boys, which would probably be the least logical group to express that kind of feeling. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. We're here with Roxy Laurie, high school values educator. And you mentioned briefly before that you use rock and roll to explore values. That sounds like a course I would like to take. How do you do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, right now in what we're doing in the high school is we're taking each value, and for each value that we teach each week, we give the kids a song. It's just part of the class, but we give them a song. For instance, we did courage last week, and we used a Rachel Platten song called Fight, and so I gave what I do is I give the kids the lyrics, we listen to the song first, then I have them highlight or underline or circle any words, any phrases, anything that means anything to them. In that particular week, I actually I looked up the song, and I actually found an interview that the artist had done discussing the meaning of the song. So I didn't share that with the kids until the end because I wanted them to have their own feelings about it. But teenagers are pretty easy with stuff like that, and so you start to talk about the song and the words that pop out to them, and you know, and all of a sudden they're discussing their own lives and how it applies to them, and you know, sometimes you can get very emotional, sometimes it's funny, but that's what we do now. The next lesson, we're going to be doing something a little bit differently. We're doing responsibility to each other. One of the songs that I'm going to be using is a Traveling Wilbury song called Handle With Care. And it's the idea of like that we all sort of, you know, we're all like a fragile package that has to be handled with care. And how do we do this? How do we treat other people? And it's your responsibility. If you value responsibility, it's not just responsibility to yourself, but it's responsibility to others. So, in that case, I'm going to then, after we finish our song, I'm going to hand out a bunch of other ones that I came up with and break them into groups and have them come up with a lesson for little kids. And actually, another part of our program next year is going to be to take kids, have the kids in the first semester learn these skills, and then take them, and they will get community service for it, to a elementary school and have them help work with the little kids. So they will be applying what they learned in our class.
So are we talking about lyrics, so this could be poetry, or are we talking about also music? Does the music actually come into play?
That's a good question. Okay. Right now, so far, this is the first semester we've done this, so it has been lyrics, and to me, lyrics is poetry. I mean, it is poetry. I mean, you know, Dylan just won the Nobel Peace Prize for his lyrics.
Has anyone told him
poetry.
That? Does he know that? He won?
Well, he did send Patti Smith to
he wanted someone who was more normal.
Love Patti Smith. But to your question, I'm actually going to have my husband come in, who is a musician, and he's going to do one of the classes on how does the music change, you know, make you feel. What does the music do when you're listening to the music of a rock and roll song? And I mean, to me, there are certain people like Jeff Beck or David Gilmour, and they could be playing their guitar, and I could just weep, and I don't really even need the lyrics. So they're definitely that helps.
So, but they don't have to learn. They don't have to be musically. They just have to be able to listen. They don't have to. You're not handing out flutes, like you know.
No. Interestingly, in this particular class, though, and I don't know what will happen in future schools, but a lot of the kids that volunteered for this class are the drama music kids. So it's an interesting thing, you know, as an aside, that sort of goes hand in hand, that those kind of kids seem to appreciate this type of thing.
So you mentioned briefly before that you got into teaching late. Mm-hmm. What was it that drove you into teaching, or motivated you is a better word?
Yeah. When I was younger, I wanted to be an actress, and that didn't go very well. No, it did. I mean, I actually did some professional work, and I actually got paid, and was a union member for a time period. But I gave it up at some point. And when it came time to say, okay, well, you know, then I became a mom, and then I wanted to do something else. I really just didn't. I wanted to go back to work. What can I do? And I actually just talked to people, and it seemed the right way to go. Actually, originally I was going to become a physical education teacher, but I was told that I really didn't know any of the sports that they taught in school, so it would not have been a good choice. And that's what happened. And then I, you know, just sort of fell into this.
But it is something that it's amazing how you end up eventually finding what is your true passion. You people who have the opportunity to go from one idea to the next sometimes just luckily come into what is their true passion.
Mm-hmm.
So Do you find teaching, and it's only been this year, but do you find teaching high school kids more difficult than the little kids?
Oh, actually, I find it much easier because, as I said earlier on, they, you know, they really do listen a lot. Well, I don't know the last time you were in an elementary school, but they don't. It's really, really difficult to get kids' attention, get them to listen, you know, pay attention.
So, do you think that this type of program is something that, I know we talked about the different cultural and political views of the country, is something that could be scaled up? Because one of the things that this country has been talking about for at least 20 years is how to make education better. And, you know, there's a zillion ideas from charter schools to vouchers to religious schools to homeschooling, but there's really no solution yet. Is this something that we ought to consider as one of the legs to really reimagine the educational system?
Mm-hmm. In the perfect world, this would be the solution. This would absolutely be the solution. You know, it's hard to talk to that based on what we have right now. Mm. But if you had a country that valued their educational system, this would be a solution, because as I said, if you started this really early on, you would have kids that wanted to learn, that were enthusiastic, and you would have classrooms that worked much, much better.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment. Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. We've been here today with Roxy Lore, high school values educator, and we've been learning about a initiative that I think is really wonderful and makes so much sense. Of course, I may not be the majority of this country, but I think this is something that would really help us, you know, come together as a country. And that leads me to the question, do people, particularly in the high school classes, come in and when you're talking about empathy or talking about social justice, does anyone raise their hand and start talking about the political environment we're in, about the president's tweeting, about certain personalities who don't treat women exactly the way they should, allegedly? Do they bring into the classroom the reality of the world isn't what we're talking about here?
Mm-hmm. So far, that has not occurred, but we're ready for it, and I would be, more than happy to talk about that with them. And I can't almost believe that it's not going to happen because of what we're talking about. So far, I mean, kids are still, even high school kids are somewhat encapsulated and in their own little worlds, and they come in thinking, you know, that it's for them. I'm learning. This is for me. And so and what we're talking about, makes them very emotional, because this is the first, I think this is the first course that they have had where they were able to speak to the way that they feel about things personally. That has not come up yet, but I'm more than happy to talk to them about the political problems we're having right now.
One of the problems in a community like Santa Barbara is there are a lot of Hispanic children here who are scared to death about coming home and finding their parents been taken away. Mm-hmm. So there's this tension that exists today that it's not just philosophical. It goes to the heart of their security. Mm-hmm. One of the things about these kinds of courses is to teach compassion, to teach things that would make them feel better about themselves, and hopefully other people will feel the same way. Roxy, it's been great having you here, particularly since it looks like you're going to save the country. And I'm really, we're probably the first radio show to have you on. And if we're still around in 10 years, we're going to say this is the Roxy Lore School of Teaching that is being taught in all the universities. Anyway, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll see you all here back next week at AHA Presents About Education.